Hello and welcome. This is Sudden Infant Death Training, How to Prevent and What to Do. My name is Sharon Sarles. I'm a recognized trainer. In Texas, my registry number is 1485. And this is Sudden Infant Death Training, which complies with licensing. And we'll start with a true story. Many, many years ago, when I was much younger, I happened to be temping. I was a temporary worker for University of Texas at Austin in the building just east of I-35. And when I say that, the folks in Austin know. And across the street from that building, was a residential area, and there was a home that was a family day home. And many of the ladies in the office had their children at this family day home, and they just thought the world of this gal who ran the family day home. They thought she was the best. Just so happened that my office window faced that house. And one day, a police car with sirens came, and then shortly after that, an ambulance was there also, and shortly after that, lots of other cars came. All the women were picking up their babies, and some of those women were women in the office I was working in, and they had to go pick up their babies and leave, and of course, at that point, we knew what had happened, that a baby had died in that family day home. And of course, that was years ago when I wasn't necessarily up on licensing, but I may have known more, having worked in daycares and preschools and early childhood centers. But all of the opinion in the office was that this woman couldn't possibly have done anything. She was perfect. But we discovered as the weeks went by that she was not going to open. And as I say, the women there didn't necessarily know about licensing. Their story was that the woman just felt too sad about this child dying. And so this was, of course, concern to the ladies who knew her and to the ladies who had the mothers who had children they had to find alternative care for. It was a very sad time. But what did she think? You know, one day, here a day like every day, she was taking care of the kids. She went over to the crib, and the baby that she had put to sleep there was now dead. How would you feel if you were her? And so at this point in the seminar, I pass out candy. Because it's a tragedy. And I know you would feel devastated just as she felt. But I brought you to that point of feeling that, so you could see how important this seminar is and how important it is to do those things that we are discussing today, so that you won't have the added terrible feeling of guilt. So what is SIDS, sudden infant death? And we say SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, is defined as the sudden death of an apparently healthy infant that remains unexplained. So that definition actually says quite a lot. There's a lot that we don't know. And so we're going to talk about some of that and maybe do our own sleuthing. I'm going to be our own little detective. But sudden infant death is defined as sudden death of apparently healthy infants that remained unexplained, so we don't always know. We do have some suspects, which we will talk about. We have about 3,000 every year in the United States. It is the third leading cause of death for children less than 1 year of age. So, hope you've all gotten your candy. You're empowered to go and get a chocolate kiss. So you feel a little better. And then we can go and hire your favorite detective. That might be Sherlock Holmes. We could put on our houndstooth caps with the ear flaps pulled up and put in our pipe. Or we can be Miss Marple's, you know, Agatha Christie's mature lady detective. Or we could be Cagney and Lacey or whoever you like. So, what does the detective start with? Well, we start with, what do we know? When do we see? When are we more likely to see sudden infant death? And so here are those statistics. Usually it happens when the children are asleep. More often before 6 months of age, and especially at ages 2 months and 4 months. Happens more often in the winter months, and happens somewhat more often in the males rather than the female babies, but you know that's true for a whole host of things. Male babies are more likely not to be born alive than female babies, more likely to die during the birthing process and thereafter during the first year. So this is a fairly typical statistics, so woohoo, ladies, we are the stronger sex. All right. If you're going to count that way, yes. All right. Low birth weight babies tend to end up with SIDS more often, preemies more often to die of SIDS. But SIDS happen in normal children. Babies born to teen moms are more likely to die from SIDS. But also, this happens with older moms. More likely in poor urban areas, the poor slums. More likely. However, sometimes in the very best of homes. More likely to minorities, the rates are somewhat higher. But, of course, as I said, always. That's not always the truth. And statistics like that, we tend to think it's probably more about the youth and poverty of the mother, because those rates are higher in those categories, and we don't have any suggestion that it has anything to do with genetics. So we do know that for mothers who smoked or used illicit substances, okay, who are users, then we have higher rates of SIDS. So SIDS tends to correlate with many other things that make for poor health. Smoking particularly we can focus on because that's preventable. I realize it may be hard to stop smoking, but it is preventable. Smoking increases the risks of 3 times over. So that's huge statistically. Any baby is 3 times. 3 times more likely, not 30, 3 times more likely to die from SIDS if their mother smokes. The good news for professional caregivers is only 20% of SIDS happens during professional care. So, not here to try to scare you, but it is a serious issue. And so we're going to follow the rules here. The recommendations. So what are the recommendations? Number one recommendation in the United States comes from the American Academy of Pediatrics, which put out the recommendation in 1992 that babies should sleep on their back. You should put babies to sleep on their back, and they should sleep on their backs. And those of you who have been in early childhood, you all know this. You have heard this. This is where the recommendation comes from in 1992, the American Academy of Pediatrics. I would like to know if this worked. Well, the good news is that, yes, SIDS has decreased by 40%. The annual rate of SIDS has decreased by 40% since this recommendation was put into effect. That's the good news. The bad news is the other 60%. Okay, so this is the recommendation from the pediatricians, and this is what licensing has implemented. So it is a rule, it is a law, and this is what we will do. And all of you are used to doing it. But I do want to ask you about what your concerns are with this recommendation. There is also, by the way, lots of research that shows that if you want teachers to implement something, you should ask them about their concerns, and this should be aired openly so that these concerns could be addressed. And we talk about the CBAM research if you want to in my live seminar. But so let me ask you what your concerns are. And I get a couple of concerns. One is, what about the child choking if they throw up? And this is a concern. So I consulted the very best professors of nursing and professors of early childhood. And the answer is, yes, it is possible for a baby to die choking on its spit up. The good news is that's improbable. It's not probably it's not going to happen. It's true that in nursing, for older patients, they put patients who might throw up on their sides. But you see, older adults are much more likely to choke on their vomit than a baby is. Because baby, well, I guess I'm, you know, treading on thin ice here because I don't have a definitive answer, but I believe the baby spits up more likely and he's not drugged or sick normally in the same way that a patient in the hospital would be, and so the baby is more likely to turn its own head. So his belly is, you know, he's ejecting the vomit more out of his mouth. And don't you know that when you see babies spitting up, it comes out of their mouth. It's not staying in there and they're not gurgling. So although it is possible, it is improbable. It's not likely that they're going to choke on their spit up. And so the people who make policy, of course, look at statistics. So the statistical probability of them dying from choking on their spit up is much less than the statistical probability of SIDS. And so that's why the decision has been made. Okay. So we're putting them on their back and not on their side, which is what somebody with some nursing experience might have thought to do, because that's what we would do with an adult. So we're putting it on. What else? Well, last night when I taught this, I got the question having to do with the mucus. We've got kids who are just snot fountains and they're gurgling. So the answer that, to the best of my knowledge, is that first off, you have to understand that babies breathing makes more noise than an adult's breathing. So a lot of times babies are breathing and they're really just fine, particularly their youngest babies. They're fine. They're making noise just because that's the way they're built. But there is a problem with mucus today, and we do have kids that are snot fountains, and I am concerned about it. And so you might try to do your best to remove the snot, you know, wiping their nose or whatever. There is an instrument to suction out snot from a baby. I don't know about that. It was used in my family, but you might want to check with your director about that because you're going to have sterilization problems and so forth. But it would be better to prevent this problem. And the fact that we have such a terrible problem with so much snot really says something first about the standard American diet and possibly also about pollution in our world. But I'm thinking about the diet. So, you know, in live seminars, I tell a personal story about that, which I will not put on the internet, about my family, and snot fountains. And so the question came and was from a doctor, how did you know to change the diet? Well, because I know that milk products and wheat products produce mucus. So, and somebody, some little like in my family, I changed their diet, and their snot fountain cleared up. They could hear better, and this helped them to then learn how to speak better. And so, you know, and the mother in the story was completely conscientious, but, you know, it just took a little more experience and caregiver. So we have many children who are eating improperly, and so I don't know what age, you know, that would go down to, but we definitely have some diet problems, and we have some snot problems. And so the best I know to tell you is to try to remove the snot and improve the diet. But we're going to put those babies down on their back. And I'm going to assume that the statistics about them suffocated with snot are much less than SIDS do. I don't know about any statistics, but I haven't heard about a pandemic of dying from choking on snot, but it is a problem. Okay. Then another concern that I get is the children need tummy time. Well, they do need tummy time. This is absolutely true. It needs to be while they're awake and supervised, because the children need to develop their musculature, their shoulders and so forth, and they do that when they're on their tummy and they're raising up. But also, we need some cognitive development. Their brain development happens when they're on their tummy, and they're then once they're strong enough to start using their hands to manipulate things. And we used to, I suppose you might still have mobiles over the crib, but you're probably not having a whole lot of toys and stuffed animals in those cribs. And the children do need to manipulate these things. They need to be on their tummy and manipulate these things, but they'll do that when they're awake and you are watching them. So this is how we're going to address these concerns. And we're going to follow licensing, which follows the recommendation of the American Academy of Pediatrics. And we're going to put the babies to sleep on their backs. The babies are going to sleep on their backs, whatever their normal inclination would be when they're in our center. They're going to sleep on their backs in a crib that, in your case, is probably no blankets. In a house where they might use blankets, you'll tell the mothers to tuck the blankets tightly around the mattress where the baby's shoulders are sticking out. So there's no way that that blanket could be over the child's head. There will be no kind of bumpers that could fall over the child's face. There'll be no stuffed animals that could fall over the child's face. All of this is worrying about whether or not the child is suffocating. And it is, we see the statistics, it is probable that over the years we have some SIDS that are diagnosed as suffocation, and it may be that we have some suffocation that's diagnosed as SIDS. So because of this great concern about suffocation, we are taking every precaution these days to be sure that children will not be, their faces will not be covered by blankets, pillows, or other items, people, toys, what have you. So better to dress them in a little sleeper if you think they're going to be cold, rather than a blanket. Now, overheating has also been suggested as a cause of SIDS. We don't know that, but it is, of course, possible that people can be overheated, and this can cause heat stroke and so forth. You know this if you're a bicycler and you live in Texas, and you know you have to be careful in the summer bicycling. So the same thing applies for babies, but of course you also know that good sleep doesn't happen if you're too cold, and then you end up cranky. So, but you're in that room. Use good judgment with that. But here's the rule. They sleep on their back, and they're not going to have anything that could possibly cover their face, because you don't want to be in the position that this wonderful Family Day Home operator was in, and you know, she was devastated. And possibly there was nothing that she could have done. Maybe the opinion of the women in the office was absolutely correct, and she was tops, and she loved the babies and took excellent care of them. But nevertheless, a baby died, and maybe that was true, that she was completely blameless in it, but she was devastated, and her livelihood went away because of it. So we're going to follow the rules. So, but we still really don't have a complete explanation for why SIDS is happening. And if we don't have a complete explanation, then we can't be sure that our measures are sufficient, or if there's anything we can do. And even this rather strenuous policies of babies sleeping with no blankets on their backs always still hasn't cut out SIDS, even in professional care. So let's put on our detective hats, possibly without the pipe. Okay, it's great for Sherlock Holmes. It doesn't work for early childhood caregivers, does it? Okay, so we've talked about the number one suspect in the United States is suffocation and overheating. And, of course, we have addressed that also. And let me take a side trip here, too, and talk about the bars on the cribs. There was a time when children were getting their heads stuck in the bars on their cribs, and so now there are regulations. First, there were regulations in early childhood, and then the manufacturers got smart and made those slats closer together. So that usually is no longer a worry, and that was one of the reasons why there were bumpers on the cribs. But I do see, still in centers, where no one has addressed the size of the space between the slats on banister stairways and other things. And gosh, I just hate to see, you know, so a building perhaps was built to be a church or an office building, and now there's a early childhood center in there, and nobody has thought about those stairs. Let me encourage you to think about those kinds of things. And if you're in that situation, you know, you could put up netting so that the stairs wouldn't have to be rebuilt. Of course, it's not unthinkable. You have to rebuild the stairs. And having, of course, a child care center on the second floor isn't ideal, but some people have to do it. So think about that. And then, so that's just a free side trip. The recommendation is that we not use water beds. We don't use pillows, and we're going to talk about not having them in bed with you later. But immediately you might say, well, they use water beds in hospitals. Well, yes, but the water beds that they put children in hospitals are much smaller than the water bed made for a couple. And so, once again, it's a concern about suffocation if that surface is too soft, whether it's a pillow or waterbed. If the face of the baby were to sink down, would they become suffocated, particularly with the sheet, for instance, over that waterbed? So this is something we don't do, no waterbeds. Okay. Now, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that babies not be taken to bed with them. They recommend room sharing, but not bed sharing. Well, of course, this is not applicable to an early childhood center because you're using cribs, and I'm certainly hoping that you're not having crib sharing. But obviously, you're not getting in the crib with them. But this is a very... So you might mention this to parents, but it's very, very controversial. So my recommendation is that if you think you have to encroach... you know, if you have to go here, if you have to talk about this with your parents, my recommendation is to speak with your director before you do that. Confer with her and see him or her. So really and truly, I want to unpack this and drill down to the bottom. The recommendation, the reason for the recommendation from the American Academy of Pediatrics is about substance abuse. Well, when you add that, it becomes really obvious that you don't want a baby in bed with parents who are stoned or drunk, because this is clearly very dangerous. A stoned or drunk parent could obviously roll over on a child and kill it. Since the recommendation has been put into place, and pediatricians are telling parents this, the SIDS rate, or applicable here, reduced by 50%. Now that has my attention. That really has my attention. So we have an abuse problem in this nation. We do know that the substance abuse rates are lower for older people, higher for younger people. And that's not because the generations are smarter necessarily. It just wasn't in fashion and available in the World War II generation and the Vietnam War generation. The boomers have smartened up over time or died. Okay, so the younger generation has it available. It is acceptable morally to many of them, and they haven't had enough disasters in their life to have aged out of use. So this is a sociologist explanation. The rates of usage are higher, and so it's also these younger people who tend to have babies. More people who are young have babies, and in fact, we are seeing more and more teenage parents, which is a worrisome trend in our society. So we are very concerned about substance abuse and bed sharing. Okay, and that's what this recommendation is about. So if that's the situation in a family, or might be the situation in a family you're talking to, then maybe it is necessary to talk about it, but I recommend checking with your director. The reason this is so controversial is because, well, you've got contrary opinions. The La Leche League, for instance, whom I recommend highly, I respect very great, La Leche League, La Leche, those of you who know Spanish know, means the milk. This is a long-standing group that promotes breastfeeding, and they have always promoted the family bed. It is their opinion that this promotes family bonding, which is something we also very much need in our society, promotes breastfeeding, and promotes cognitive health because of the breastfeeding and emotional health because of the bonding. And they think that it would be very unlikely that a breastfed mother could possibly roll over on their child because they're just so connected. And I have some sympathy with that. I can't imagine having ever been so asleep with my child, whom I, by the way, breastfed. I can't imagine having ever rolled over on her. That just doesn't make sense to me. I have a friend who... But, you know, I'm not the average person, and I certainly wasn't using. And I didn't have that child in the bed with me, with my husband, so I didn't do that. But, so, no cause to think weird things about me. But I just remember how connected I was to that child. You know, I would wake up before she cried in the middle of the night, ready to nurse. So, and I had a friend, a professor. Friend, she was in education. Her husband was in education. They had their child when they were older because of all this fancy education they had been doing. And her doctor told her she was abusing her child by taking it to bed, and she flipped out. And so I really kind of understood her point of view here. Her doctor kind of overdid it, and I think I see her point. That, you know, if dad is leaving at 6 o'clock and you're bleary eyed, you stumble over to the crib, pick up the baby, nurse that baby, you're sitting in bed, and then why not snooze to noon holding that baby? Well, I can see that point. On the other hand, having said that last night, the director who's been in childhood for a lifetime said, yeah, well, she knew a rather fat woman who nursed her baby, snoozed off, and the baby did suffocate, which is, you know, beyond my imagination, but I believe this woman that this happened. I don't think she would have lied to me. That's terrible. Then on the other hand, so that's an opinion on the one side, La Leche League. On the other side is that you're going to have families who would flip out with the whole idea of room sharing, that they would think that a baby in the same room as a couple would be traumatized, and absolutely not. So you've got sharply differing opinions here, and so I will just leave it that way and say it's very controversial. The American Academy of Pediatricians recommends room sharing for infants without bed sharing, and leave it. My recommendation is if you have to address this, if you have to talk about this with some of your families that you serve, then talk first with your director. Okay, because maybe she has, with her experience, she has knowledge of the family or can help you approach it, you know, introduce the topic in a wise way. Or at least she'll have a heads up when, if the family gets mad at you and starts complaining. Okay, so the whole bed sharing is another top suspect. It's really about substance abuse, and they don't often say that when they're talking about it. Another suspect is the toxicity in the environment, and this is something that we really do need to look at, we really do need to talk about, and we really do need to investigate scientifically. Clearly, in your classrooms, there is going to be no smoke, unless, of course, it comes in on the clothes of certain family, but we need to try to keep the smoking away from the babies and any other kind of particulate matter. So in my classrooms, I like to have an air purifier with no moving parts. This is my opinion. This works for me. And so I'm really impressed with some of the great new technology that comes out. And I'm not going to push one or the other or even talk about that too much, except that I'll tell you that's my opinion. It really improves the air quality. So even if, you know, a smoking family does come into your room or a baby comes from a smoking family, at least you know that your air quality is as good as you can have it. And if you want to discuss that with me more, please come to my website at www.orgstrat.net, www.orgstrat.net. And I probably will have blogged about that, and you can search on my website and find out a little bit more about that, and even interact, you know, write in your opinions, your experience on this, because my blog allows for that. You can just type it in. Very easy. So, or you can email me if you're very interested in that. info@orgstrat.net. info at O-R-G, S like Sam, T like Tom, R-A, T like Tom, dot net, orgstrat.net. Okay, maybe have to get a better URL. Here we go. So I'll be on the net, though, and you can ask me about lowering the particulate matter and the toxicity of the environment, because that's an interest of mine. All right, now another investigation. Here's another suspect that the medical researchers are looking into, investigating as we speak, is possible inherent periodic destabilization of the brain systems at critical periods of development. We know that there are critical periods, that certain times the brain is doing certain things. We can tell that in education by observing, and so some of the best curriculum are around that. We talk a lot about that in Montessori, and yes, I have Montessori introduction up there, and if you're interested in more of this brain development, then let me know, and maybe we can have an intermediate or more advanced Montessori discussion about that and how we use critical development in Montessori curriculum. We don't say curriculum planning. We don't actually say that Montessori, but that may be the way you look at it, and so what the researcher thinking is that at certain periods, like at 2 months and 4 months, the brain is going through such a change that it becomes destabilized. And so whether this is an abnormality or a normal function, but causes a weakness, we don't know, but maybe this is related to this SIDS. And the question has been raised because there have been some some autopsies on these children, and there have been some brain abnormalities. It seems to be related to serotonin circulation, and we await more research, and I'm going, okay, because I know that we have other problems arising in our society with serotonin and methionine reuptake, and this is really beyond my expertise, but I know that this is in the discussion, and I also know that we've learned so much more about brains since the 1990s. We have CT scans, and so we'll just have to await more research. But it is concerning. Do we have some toxic insults to our systems that are showing up in brain problems? And this seems likely in other quarters. And so does that relate here? We don't know yet. Okay, but possibly there is some destabilization of the brain. And possibly that's even inherent, you know, normal for the brain. We just don't know. There is some investigation now, a connection between ear damage and the increase in SIDS. So, and possibly, we do know that we have a lot more ear infections. And so, again, this is ongoing. Don't want to say too much about it. We just don't know. That's the way the science works. Science puts out hypotheses and then test them, see if there's enough support. And we're looking at statistical probability. And we're not even there yet. So we've just got some hypothesis and some testing going on. So we'll await the results of some more research. There is a thought that pacifiers might help, that the thrusting of the tongue in a properly manufactured pacifier might help against SIDS. So I like to ask, what do you think at this point in the seminar? Because the more experienced caregivers, infant, toddler folks, we'll often have something to say about this. If you were going to put a pacifier in a child's mouth to help it go to sleep, then don't you think you'd have to supervise that? And also, I would have to say you would never want that pacifier on a string, right? Because that goes back to the whole suffocation and choking discussion. You don't want child to choke on pacifier string. But then what will happen is the teachers will all tell me the children who have pacifiers, always it comes on a string. And you can see the parents' concern that that pacifier is going to get lost, picked up by another child, etc., etc. So confer with your director about this. Maybe pacifiers help. And certainly if a doctor has prescribed a pacifier, then you'd want to use it. But anyway, other than that, I don't know. We'll just have to say the jury is out, the research is out, but there are some people who think that the pacifiers will help. And now I want to tell you the suspect that I think that is the very most interesting. Okay, so Sherlock Holmes opens his mouth in surprise and the pipe falls out. And Miss Marple leans forward. And here it is. Australians now have, for at least 10 years, thought that they have solved this problem. And they have different rules in their early childhood centers. Very definite rules about this, because they believe that the problem of SIDS is basically a toxicity problem made from a toxic fumes that come from the mixing of the flame retardant that is required to be placed on the sheets and the stomach chemicals that come up with the vomit. So when the flame retardant and the baby spit up mix, then it causes a noxious fume which is so close to the baby's face that the baby dies. This is what the Australians think. So, notice that if this is true, if they're correct, then placing the baby on its back would reduce the problem because the baby's face is now further away from the mixing, from the sheet, and from the mixing of these two chemicals, but it might not entirely cut it out. Isn't that interesting? That's exactly what we have. So, why is there flame retardant on sheets? Well, I have a story about that. When I was young, very little, we had a family next door, and they were painters. Well, that's beside the point. That is part of the story, but we'll cut to the chase, is that one day, my mother rushed out of the house, rushed over to the next door neighbor's house, and took that lady and her child to the emergency room. What had happened is a five-year-old child, and I was probably about five, that five-year-old child had been put down to a nap, but being a boy, had found his father's lighter, had played with the lighter in his bed, caught his bed sheets on fire. And so there was a fire in the five-year-old's bed, and so the mom at that point was just so flabbergasted and upset. Anyway, I guess she called my mother. How did my mother know about the fire next door? I don't really know. But anyway, my mother scooped up the child. Of course, I'm sure the fire had been put out by that, and took them to the emergency room. And fortunately, the child lived, and, you know, but he did have some burns on him, which is not pleasant. So because of situations like that, PJs and sheets for children are required by law now in the United States to have flame retardant on them. Now, I know in your center, fire would never get close to a crib. Now, I know that's true, but nevertheless, there is flame retardant required by law in the United States to be on those sheets. So, in Australia, babies, there's no rule that babies have to be put on their backs to sleep, but there is some strenuous effort to keep their face away from the flame retardant. So, yes, they put sheets on very tightly, and if you've put sheets on, maybe you know. This is part of the anti-suffocation problem, but I think that they may not be flame retardant on the sheets in daycares, or they may put plastic sheets on top of the regular sheets, which, of course, probably not pleasant for a baby to sleep on plastic sheet, but nevertheless, they keep the flame retardant away from those babies, and they have significantly reduced their rate of SIDS. And so, I don't know why this is not being discussed in the States. For me, that's the frustration. Anyway, you're going to have to use commercially produced sheets. I think probably the better homes now are going to use organic sheets, but also put very tightly on their cribs. But you're going to use commercially produced sheets and put the babies on their back because that's the licensing rule. But I do hope that this Australian opinion gets into our discussion, into our investigation, and of course, the way science is supposed to work is that our scientists are supposed to read their scientists' work, but often governmental and commercial interests intervene. And so it has to be done in the United States or it doesn't exist. Well, okay. So I'm hoping to inject this into our discussion. And once again, we'll wait on the research. So our detectives are busy working. And so at this point, there is a lot that we don't know about SIDS. Sudden infant death, we're still defining it as when an apparently healthy child dies. So, then what? Okay, and when I ask that in live session, I get a chorus back. We put the baby to sleep on its back. Yes. Remove pillows, stuff toys, use an elf suit sleeper, and be sure their head remains uncovered there, and recommend that at home too. Okay, so did everybody get candy? Did everybody get a test? Okay, so we're going to take that multiple choice test. If you'd like to know more about this, the Horse's Mouth is the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2002 has a report entitled Reducing the Risk of Infant Death Syndrome, Second Edition, which is adapted from Caring for Our Child National Health and Safety Performance Standard Guideline for Out-of-Home Child Care, Elk Grove, Villa, Illinois, 2002. You can also go on the web, www.firstcandle.org, or you can go www.nichd.nih, which is the National Institute of Health, .gov/SIDS, S-I-D-S. Okay, there you have it. So I want you to turn the tape off at this point and do the multiple choice test. So this, if this is online, that page should be available for you there for click through. And so I'm going to let you find that and take the easy multiple choice test. And then we'll see you back here once you've done that. Okay, so now you're back from having taken the easy multiple choice test. And let's go over the answers to be sure we all got 100%. Number one, the American Academy of Pediatrics and Licensing says the best sleep position is, everybody yells out, on the baby's back. Number two, which of these statements is true? A, SIDS is the third leading cause of death among infants. B, SIDS is entirely preventable. No. C, most infants seem sick before they die of SIDS. No. D, SIDS is a result of child abuse. Well, yeah, if you're stoned and sleeping in the bed with a baby and you rolls over, then yeah, I guess that's child abuse. But the best answer is A, SIDS is the leading cause of death among infants. 3, which of these is the best bed for a baby? A, a firm mattress free of loose bedding and stuffed toys. B, soft sleeping surfaces. C, floor with stuffed toys. D, bed with mom who is drunk and on drugs. Obviously, a firm mattress free of loose bedding and stuffed toys, right? Nothing that could possibly suffocate the baby. 4, babies can die in their cribs when nothing seems to be wrong. Is that A, true, B, false, C, don't know? The answer is A, true. 5, SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, occurs more when A, baby is a preemie, B, parents smoke, C, mother is less than 20 years of age. D, all of the above. D, all of the above. So I trust you got 100%, and you will always do the right thing in your early childhood center, and may you be blessed with never being any closer to a case of SIDS than I have been. Okay? Very good. Thank you so much for taking this training. Once again, my name is Sharon Sarles, S-A-R-L-E-S. In Texas, my registry number is 1485. If you want credit for this seminar, send me a copy of your test and your address and the cost that's posted there. You may do that online, or you may do that. And online, by the way, my email is info@orgstrat.net. info@org, S like Sam, T like Tom, R A, T like Tom, dot net. N-E-T. Just in case you need to email me, be sure things happen properly online. But if you'd like to do this via land mail, you're certainly welcome to do that. And my address, Sharon Sarles, S-A-R-L-E-S, at P.O. Box 971, Cedar Park, two words, Cedar Park, Texas, 78630. Once again, Sharon Sarles, S-A-R-L-E-S, P.O. Box 971, Cedar Park, Texas, 78630. And enclose your check and your copy of your test and, of course, your land address. Some people leave off their address. They want me to send them something, but I can't if I don't have your address. I would be delighted to send you a certificate so that licensing will know that you did, in fact, take this course and complied with their regulations. Also, let me let you in on the fact that I have many more courses. More will be coming in this format, but I have quite a few. I love to come into centers, help you address the culture in your center. That's really luxurious, and the very best centers have me in. I love to do that. Occasionally, you can find me at a conference. If you'd like to find me at a conference, then let the meeting planner know that you'd like to have me at a conference. And SIDS and Shaken Baby is something I do for my customers' sake, but I have some specialties. I have a book out on conflict reduction and teamwork, and I have a newer book out called The Government Is Not a Village, which I, of course, start with Hillary Clinton's work in the 90s and bring those statistics up to date. Unfortunately, the statistics are worse. And so, yes, we need all to address these problems, and we're all part of the village. And what can we do? And there are some good answers to that, because there are some people whose centers are outperforming in terms of providing academic advancement and whole life success. It's not just about academics, but that's just something easy to measure and something we are interested in. So which centers do the best? Which centers have the kids that go on to do well in school and in life, and which centers are contributing to society? And you want to be one of those centers, don't you? And so you want to get in to my seminar that comes out of the book. I guess I may need a new name for my seminar. We'll let you know. So if you want to know all about that, or if you're an aspiring director and you want more tips on leadership and management, or maybe you are a director, then I specialize in those kinds of things, and you can find out all about it at www.orgstrat.net. Well, I may have a new website, Sharon Seminars, pretty soon, but a new URL. But anyway, I will have my information available to you, and I am eager to serve you. All right, so this is Sharon Sarles wishing you the blessings of never having a baby die in your care, and hopefully you can improve the chances for all of your families to have their children grow healthy, happy, and whole. Best wishes.